Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse, great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices, changing the mood of food.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news shortly, and our former ITN journo turned pundit Derek Dyson will be joining us throughout the show as Willem van Denderen, our news hound, travels throughout the mountains of Albania. Interesting to talk to him when he gets back about what all that was about. But first up, the Socceroos' campaign to qualify for a sixth consecutive World Cup resumes this week with Graham Arnold's men travelling to Dakar to face Bangladesh on Thursday and home to Palestine in Perth next Tuesday. The fixtures represent the final stage of second round qualification for Australia, who've already secured their place in the third round with 4 wins, 15 goals and none conceded, a record which is expected to continue, but with official FIFA rankings vital to the highest possible ranking ahead of the draw for round three, there will be nothing taken for granted. Former News Limited and Keep Up journalist and now freelance football authority Tom Smithies will join us to discuss it all, and maybe a quick one about the return of his beloved Saints to the English top flight. Then a very special friend of Box to Box, Martin Tyler, returns to look at the Three Lions ahead of the Euros, which kick off in 11 days. 3 years ago, Gareth Southgate's men were swept on a wave of national euphoria to the final at Wembley in the delayed Euro 2020, with an entire nation willing them to break the drought, only for the dream to be shattered amid chaotic as the COVID pandemic receded. Another gut-wrenching quarterfinal knockout in the World Cup in Qatar since, and the long wait continues. Will this current England squad ascend to the pantheon, or will the wait continue? It will be fascinating to get Martin's thoughts ahead of the tournament in Germany, less than 2 weeks away. Edge, always a big week, but not often we get the Socceroos and Matildas both playing in the same week, admittedly the Matildas friendlies, but with the Paris Olympics that you're heading to. But right now we find you in LA preparing for the 2026 World Cup already, mate. Geez, you travel a lot.
Yes, Rob, greetings from Los Angeles, downtown LA. When you're preparing to take a thousand people away on a tour program, it's quite a bit in it, Rob. So we're here starting the planning and looking at all the different permutations around what might happen, where the Socceroos may play, and meeting all sorts of people that we secure services from to put the best program together so people can have the time of their lives at the World Cup, Rob.
Oh, well, we might have to chat about that in a moment. And Derek, you would have got up early on Sunday morning to watch the Champions League final, but we're going to talk to Martin soon about that and the Euros.
Yeah, it was a familiar story, wasn't it? Heartbreaking for Dortmund and their superb fans. I mean, whatever you can say about them, the fan base is unbelievable. And I think that fan base actually carries them a heck of a long way in these tournaments in particular. But yeah, the familiar script, what's 15 in Spanish? I don't know, but they've got it. Got it all sewn up. And once again, Real Madrid don't put in the best performance of their season, but they get the job done.
Yeah, they always do. I know it's quindici in Italian, so it must be something similar to that. All right, well, why don't we get stuck into the news? And speaking, Edge, of those tours, we're going to flip the script this week with both national sides in the headlines and start with Socceroos and Matildas Central for the Green and Gold Army. Now, you can join the Green and Gold Army and Edge. There are some spots left available for Paris to watch the Matildas try to finally claim a podium finish in a major international tournament. I was looking at the site earlier today. Now, you've got a magnificent trip planned with the ticket guarantee to take the uncertainty out. You've announced Melissa Barbieri will be one of the hosts. It's an 11-night trip, premium accommodation, all the transfers for Matildas functions. How do our listeners get on board at this late stage, mate?
Just go to ggarmy.com and get in quick, because there's only a few places that remain. We're about to bring the drawbridge up on the sales for France. There is a great opportunity to come along. It will be a wonderful, wonderful trip. And, Rob, what about those Matildas players? Look, we must say that we're recording the podcast before the kickoff of the second Matildas in China game, but on Tuesday morning, which is after we recorded this, the squad for the Matildas is going to be announced. Do you think Tony Gustafsson has made up his mind about who's in that squad before the first game, before the second Australia-China game? What do you think?
Now, Willem must be sitting there over in Albania doing whatever he's doing, thinking, you're knocking down his pins with your opening remarks, which you've done. But as you said, he is going to sit down tomorrow and he's going to personally tell every member of the 23-woman squad who's made the 18 woman Olympic team. And while, like you say, he's got a pretty good idea who he's going to take, he's made it pretty clear previously.
Do you think he's made up his mind?
Well, hang on. I was going to say, I'm going to ask you. It's not all about skill and speed, as many have written. Erin Smith, I was reading her article in the Herald Sun, the Telegraph, for this three-week tournament. He needs utility players, game changers, some spark, and the most important ingredient in his recipe is chemistry. Now, he's had plenty of months to prepare for the absence of Sam Kerr. So if there's a couple of players on the fringe's edge, if he's largely picked the squad, I don't know anyone who knows women's football better than you. Who are the wildcards?
Well, I don't think there is any wildcards. I think it's Gorry versus Claire Wheeler, whether Katrina Gorry gets up from her injury. I think there's a bit of...
Well, we saw mistakes in the Women's World Cup taking injured players in. I mean, Sam Kerr missed the first couple of games. And
Gorry's not with the Matildas group in this window either. And she's recovering from a syndesmosis injury, which is pretty nasty. I think there's a spare defender, whether it's Claire Polkinghorne or Winona Heatley. I think that's a consideration in terms of who gets the spare defender, whether you go with experience or an eye for the future. And then obviously up the field, there's going to be some hard decisions. There's three forwards that you've got to get into one, basically. Tamika Yallop is probably in a contest with Sian Fryer. It'll be interesting to see whether he goes with experience again or someone with an eye to the future. So they're the tough decisions. But there's some definite locks. Michelle Heyman has to be a lock for me. And then obviously Fowler, Ford, Rasso, Van Engmond in the Ford, they're all a lock. Cooney Cross is a lock. Kennedy and Hunt's a lock. But, you know, Caitlin Ford with a hamstring. I think there's plenty of time for her to recover. But, he will be having a restless night. I think he hasn't made up his mind about those last couple of selections in the team. I really think they're still probably swirling around in his head.
Geez, it's fascinating. It's a tough job. Such a hard one to leave five players out who all desperately want to be there. All right, well, we'll watch this space, as our listeners will have known by now. That match you've already referred to kicks off momentarily as we record, so it'll be fascinating. These are the vagaries of podcasting. At any time of day, you're always going to miss some football match, and so you'll know the score as you're listening to this, dear listener. Okay, the Socceroos and Graham Arnold has said it's time to let his ability do the talking as Nestor Aaron Kunda finally gets the chance to show on the world stage what the hype is all about as one of the three uncapped players in the squad to face Bangladesh and Palestine in the final stage of second round qualification for the World Cup 2026 in the USA, Canada and Mexico, after the 18-year-old threatened to switch allegiance to Burundi or Tanzania after being consistently overlooked from national camps. Along with Paul Izzo and Apostolos Stamatopoulos, Aaron Kunda is part of a squad which sees the return of Alessandro Ciccati, who is part of the West Australian contingent, which is quite clever with the scheduling of the game. Cam Burgess is another, and Adam Taggart, Perth's glory man. The Mariners, Josh Nisbet. But we're going to talk all about this with Tom Smithy soon, Edge. But you know, as much as some might observe that these are matches we've just got to get through, there's always an important element to these in terms of rankings and getting through to the next phase.
Your ranking's crucially important that the Socceroos try and get above South Korea to ensure a softer group in the third phase of qualification, and obviously that would lead to a better pot for the World Cup draw as well. Don't forget, we're going to 48 teams at the 2026 USA Mexico Canada World Cup. So yeah, it's pretty important. But I mean, it's an incredible amount of young talent in that squad. I can't wait to talk to Tom Smithies. We'll go through it in great detail. But how can you not be excited about Aaron Kunda or Azani or Nisbet, even Paul Izzo in goals? I mean, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Now, another game that we are going to talk about, that which has already been played, we're going to talk to Martin Tyler before we get into the Euro discussion about it, is, of course, the Champions League final. Now, after being rattled by the pace and intensity of Dortmund in the opening half at Wembley, the German side experienced what so many before have, as Real Madrid climbed off the canvas and delivered a 1-2 knockout to lift their 15th Champions League title.
In by Kroos. And Real Madrid have gone in front. Dani Carvajal, the breakthrough at last. Second best for much of this final. But Real Madrid are now in front, headed in front by Dani Carvajal.
And we'll expand on this with Martin. And, of course, in stoppage time where we have our own choices, it is my game of the week. We'll go through it in a little more detail then. But as Phil McNulty from the BBC wrote, for Dortmund, Karim Adeyemi will wonder whether he should have shot rather than try to go around Real keeper Thibaut Courtois when he was clean through, then whether he could have done better with another chance that was saved. Nicholas Fulkrug saw his shot bounce back from the inside of the post so close, the striker thwarted by Courtois after the break from a powerful header. And all the time, there was a growing sense of inevitability, Derek, that Real would survive and prevail when they looked deep in trouble, as they did against Manchester City in the quarterfinals and Bayern Munich in the last four. And they did, when all things German, of all things, a German playing in the final game of his 300-game spell at Real, littered with success, Toni Kroos put a corner on Dani Carvajal's head for the go-ahead goal before a defensive calamity sealed it. Now, surely, mate, it was going to end no other way.
Yeah, I mean, look, in a two-horse race, the second horse always has a chance, and you have to think, you know, Borussia Dortmund are there for some reason. For our listeners that don't maybe follow Bundesliga as closely, Dortmund finished fifth this season. So they're not in that kind of two-way battle at the top or in the Champions League places. They're, you know, right down below the top teams this year. And, you know, obviously this is a team that whenever it creates great players has to move them on, whether it's, you know, the likes of Haaland or whoever. And you did feel sorry for Mats Hummels at the end there. He was just sort of staring into the crowd, realizing that, you know, that sort of last chance probably for him and his professional career had gone. But yeah, quite fitting that it was a German in Toni Kroos, as you said, that was pivotal in the game. A lot of people kind of calling him as a possible man of the match. And he's someone that really has gone under the radar in his Real Madrid career, really, because he's always been playing with much more celebrated players, whether it be, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo or nowadays Vinicius Junior and Bellingham. But this guy has made this Real Madrid midfield tick for 10 years. He's been there the entire time that I've lived in Australia. He's been in the Real Madrid midfield. So that's a good place for him to bow out in terms of his club career. And of course, he'll try and take it one step further with Germany in the summer as well.
And before he even turned up in Madrid, he'd had a 100-plus game career in the Bundesliga with Bayern Munich and Leverkusen as well. So, you know, he came, this is the finished product, and just got better from there. So, look, we'll talk more about that with Martin and in stoppage time again. But one final one, especially for you, Derek. I plucked this one from, you know, a very full week of football stories. But after a long and colourful 24-year career where he's won 21 major honours, managing some of the world's leading football clubs, including spells at Benfica, Porto, Chelsea, of course, Inter Milan, Real Madrid, Manchester United, Spurs, and most recently Roma, Jose Mourinho began the latest chapter with a signature headline telling Fenerbahce fans, "This shirt is my skin," as he was presented as the new coach of the Turkish Super League club. Have a listen to this.
He walked out to his new supporters, including his own walkout music. Jose Mourinho, the special one, special one, Jose Mourinho.
He you've got to watch the clip. It's hilarious. They've even made their own TIFO already. Thousands of people attended the Sukru Sarıkuğulu Stadium in Istanbul on Sunday to watch the signing ceremony, which took place on a huge stage built on the field. The 61-year-old replaces İsmail Kartal, who left the Yellow Canaries after they finished second in the league to Galatasaray, despite losing just one game and recording 99 points last term. Clearly not good enough for a side boasting so many titles as they have. Now, Derek, 61. He's 61 years old. Carlo Ancelotti is 64 and has just won the Champions League again. Surely, despite all of his outrageous antics, this has to be seen as a signing which puts the spotlight on Turkish football and might well be the ideal one to reinvigorate the special one's career.
I don't know whether it's more of a case of why certain players of a certain vintage end up at Fenerbahçe as well. I think it's a club that will pay you premium club wages. And yes, you'll get some European football thrown in there as well. But it's maybe the place you go when no one else in Western Europe wants you, possibly. So I don't know if it would have been top of Jose Mourinho's list. I think if there was another job in a top four or five European league, he may have taken it. He may also have taken a prestigious international job. He was being linked with Brazil quite ridiculously at one point. But, you know, if there's one man that can go into a totally combustible situation and come out smelling of roses on occasion, it is Jose Mourinho. And you've got to wonder what that first Galatasaray game is going to be like and what he's going to be doing. I just saw one Fenerbahce sign with a picture of Jose Mourinho, but looking a bit like Walter White, and it said, "I am not in danger, I am the danger." So maybe that's a foreshadowing of what might happen, Edge.
They are a ginormous club, Fenerbahce, massive club. Incredible rivalries with Beşiktaş and Galatasaray, three ginormous clubs in Istanbul. I think it's absolutely fantastic for Turkish football. I hope they get on a run in the Champions League, a new format, don't forget, with a sort of league format rather than the group format. So he's sure to get some pretty good trips with Fenerbahçe into some of his old stomping grounds. I think it's a great appointment, and I wish him all the best. And I love Turkish football. They are some incredible clubs. I'd love one of those clubs to go deep in the Champions League sometime soon, because it would excite that part of Europe.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all know 20 years ago they were one of two bolters to make the semi-finals of the Japan-Korea World Cup, and but for a little bit of luck on their side, could have been playing in a World Cup final, Turkey. So there's no question whatsoever about the pedigree of Turkish football. It's more a matter of, I think, the combustibility you mentioned, Derek. And I think the sort of the analogy that you were looking for but not quite perhaps prepared to express was that Jose is the kind of guy that can fall in a bucket of shit and come out smelling of roses. So let's find out if he can do it this time, because it'd be great to see him do it. I mean, before he got sacked at Roma, he'd obviously won the trophy and he was the favourite son there for a little while until he wasn't. So if there's one thing's for sure, we know he'll be loved at Fenerbahce until he isn't. So it'll be a fun ride to watch with the special one over the course of the journey. Now, Edge, you did flick me one piece of news before we jumped on just briefly. A really important signing for the Central Coast Mariners, re-signing, I should say. As we know, they're a club which develops players, and we expect them to lose players over the course of the journey. But a very critical foundation piece of the puzzle for next season is guaranteed to return.
Nicola Docco signed for the next three seasons, Rob. So that is fantastic news for Central Coast Mariners and their fans. He was the player of the AFC Cup final. He did so well for Central Coast Mariners at the pointy end of all of their most important matches, and I'm sure all Mariners fans are celebrating that, and because they're probably be bracing to lose a few, aren't they? Farrell, I'd say they're going to lose, and Nisbet, two of their young Australians who've done so well. So that's a big positive for Mark Jackson and Richard Peel and and everybody associated with the Central Coast Mariners.
Yeah, good signing that one to keep him at the club. Okay, let's move on. Tom Smithies is coming on after the break. The Socceroos have got a couple of important matches. There's never a World Cup qualifier that isn't important. We are all old enough on this show to remember the days where World Cup qualifying was considered to be a drought, and to be staring down the barrel of a sixth consecutive one with Edge over there in LA preparing to take 1,000 Australian supporters is just a little bit surreal. So regardless of the matches, they're always vital. And of course, Tom is a great man and huge fan of Southampton, so we couldn't get him on with it. I think we almost sort of bribed him to say, come on and talk about the Socceroos, and then we'll let you talk about Southampton. Not quite, but it's what's going to happen anyway. He's next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box, and as we mentioned off the top of the show, the Socceroos' campaign to qualify for a sixth consecutive World Cup resumes this week with Graham Arnold's men travelling to Dakar to face Bangladesh on Thursday and home against Palestine in Perth next Tuesday. Now, while the team have already qualified for the second round of qualifications, a squad announcement like this has rarely been anticipated as much and prefaced by some remarks by one of the players who was sitting on the edge of his seat deciding whether he'd play for Australia at all. That's all been answered, and the man in question, Nestori Irinkunda, is in the squad. The chat we're about to have is with former News Limited and Keep Up senior football journalist and now freelance football authority, one of our good friends, Tom Smithies. How are you, Tom?
Extremely well, and very much looking forward to these games.
Yeah, likewise, mate. And we are going to have a bit of an indulgence towards the end, talking about another one of your passions in the English Premier League. But we'll just park that for the time being, mate. But look, it's always good to have international football on the agenda. We've got the Matildas and the Socceroos in the same week. It's a bit of a rarity. But I referred to Nestori Irinkunda, a rather sort of unexpected interjection into the considerations of the squad by him, but it's the kind of thing that you occasionally get from a young bloke who's as eager as he is to represent his squad. You don't see it that often, but what did you make of it and Arnie's response in the press conference when he made the squad announcement?
I think the thing to remember is that these things do not happen in isolation. They don't happen overnight. This is kind of a process that's been going on for some time since Arnie first brought Irinkunda in as a train-on player to get a little taste of what the elite level is actually about and how hard the players work, the level of intensity of training. You know, for a kid like Irinkunda with extraordinary talent, like once-in-a-generation talent, but someone for whom things have been, you know, he hasn't had that many setbacks. And I think they wanted just to him to see when they first took him into camp how hard it would be to excel at that level. But, you know, suddenly you're amongst, even with talent, you're amongst a lot of players with talent. And then went back to his club and obviously produced yet more entries for the highlights reel, got the move to Bayern, etc. But there's been conversations from what we hear. There's conversations been going on now for weeks about him coming in for this squad. It's a really good chance to get him away, be in an overseas environment. They've been doing this warm-up camp in Thailand, and that's, you know, the chance to really get to know him as a player. And I'm pretty sure there'll be some minutes. I'd be very surprised if he didn't get some minutes. Kind of no point, really, in bringing him in without seeing whether he can bring that brand of self-confidence and self-belief into international football, albeit, you know, against games which shouldn't be the most taxing of the program, but still it's international football, it's World Cup qualifying, it's all of that stuff. So it'd be fascinating to see how he goes. But so in terms of that sort of you know, the quotes from Irinkunda about, you know, almost pick me or else I'm looking at my options, funny timing, and I still sometimes wonder how well advised he is, because we've known that this was going on in the background. And anyway, he's in camp now, and I'm sure he's feeling wanted.
And as a, you know, seasoned observer of football talent around the world, we saw him up against Newcastle in that A-League All-Stars game. Admittedly, that was a a relatively junior squad that Newcastle put on the park and embarrassed themselves in that 8-0 drubbing. But when Nkunda came on, he was immediately influential. Do you think, given all of the raps and plaudits and what we've seen so far at this young age, that we can mark him out as an international class X-factor player that could almost be a game changer for the Socceroos over the long term, or is it too early to say?
Well, the evidence is there. There are things that are about him that excite me. Daniel Azani came into the team. He had the self-confidence. He had the moves. We wondered whether he had enough pace to be a winger. He came on in some couple of lovely cameos actually at the World Cup in 2018. But there's something about Nkunda that there's a toughness there. Like, he is so hard to get off the ball. You see seasoned defenders unable to handle him. He has got an extraordinary shot from distance. One of the things he's going to have to learn really quickly is how to play to a game plan. And I think it's one of the reasons that Carl Veer held him back. And you saw that with the Kaur brothers as well. You know, the sort of football they were playing as we were younger, it was a lot more freeform, and it took them a while to understand how to play to a system. You don't want to take away a lot of the individual stuff that makes Aaron Cunningham so exciting, but he will have to learn how to play in a system. And that'll be the sort of challenge for him. I think the talent is all there to be a game changer, to be a really exciting player, whether it's through the middle, whether it's out wide. There's all sorts of roles he could play. He's got to fit that into a system, and going to German football, you know, it is all about the system and playing for the team. But the ingredients are there to make me very excited.
Tom, it's Mike Edgley here. Ranking points have been made. There's been a little bit of it made in the media by Socceroos coach Graham Arnold, and he's obviously doing that to try and maybe educate the football community about what it means to get above South Korea, and then a better group for the next phase of qualifying, and ultimately a better pot in the World Cup draw in 2025 in December. So is he getting the balance right between the importance of these games and casting an eye to the future with the selections of, you know, Nisbet, Iredale, Nkunda, Stamatolopoulos, Azani, Sakati, and even Cam Devlin back in after his long-term ankle injury? Is he getting the balance right between finding the new players, giving them some sort of opportunity, but also having enough experience to get the job done?
I was pleasantly surprised by the squad in some of the names he is looking at. Well, I think the really important context to remember is the way that the format has changed in qualifying. So in the next round, instead of going to two groups where you're going to get at least two other tough teams, they're going to go into three groups. And so if you are the better your ranking, you've got a chance of avoiding a better chance of avoiding the big seeds that we used to run into and we struggled with to get, like Saudi Arabia, for instance, in qualifying for 2018, and Japan and South Korea, et cetera, et cetera. So they are paradoxically even more important than they were before, even though there are more positions up for grabs, because there really is a chance now to give yourself a more favourable path through round three of qualifying and straight into the World Cup. Because I think it's six teams from those three groups. The top two will go straight through. Then the other teams are into all sorts of, there are going to be so many extra games after that, the teams that come third and fourth. So you really want to give yourself the best possible shot. So I can see why ranking points are so important, but there is a balance to be struck there. And what I really found interesting with the squad is there's the raw talent, there's the youth of Nkunda. There's the sort of recall for the boy wonder who went astray in Azani. But then you've also got people like Paul Izzo, who are 29. You know, they're not young in any sense, but they've played well enough to be given a chance. And I think he's really reflected some A-League form. He's had a look at and said, I need another goalkeeper or whatever it is, and cast the net quite widely. We might be surprised at who actually steps up at training and who makes a bit of a name and a bit of a claim for themselves. Because I just think there's some really interesting figures there. Even looking at the leadership group, you know, it's pretty predictable in the sense of people like Jackson Irvine, but Adam Taggart's on it, which says a lot, you know, about his standing in the group. So I think there's players who are going to get a chance and a real opportunity to stake a bit of an unexpected claim.
Now, why we're all excited about Sakatti and Irin Kunda choosing Australia over their other options. Obviously, you know, when they're 21 years or younger, if they play less than three matches for their senior team, they can still choose to leave Australia and take another option. But one player that everybody is looking for in squad selections is Christian Volpato. And it sounds like he was selected or invited to attend, but he has declined and is now with the Italian under 21. So what are you hearing about Volpato? I'm hearing all sorts of different rumours and stories about why he hasn't accepted any of the invitations to the Australian camp. Arnie's been amazing at convincing players with dual nationalities to choose Australia. I think the only one we missed out on Lyndon Dykes with Scotland, and I don't think we're too worried about that. But what do you think's happening with Volpato? Is this the one we're going to miss out on?
It looks increasingly that way. Arnie has spent months, years talking to him, being well aware that the last thing he should do is give him an ultimatum. Really, he's tried to be understanding. It is difficult. You know, as an Englishman who's lived in Australia for 20-odd years, I've got two teenage boys, and if you ask them who they play for, they'd probably say the Socceroos, but I'm not sure it would be cut and dried. You know, there are interesting things of lineage and history and family history and what's important to, you know, relatives, all that kind of stuff. It's not necessarily a straightforward decision, and I think Arnie's gone as far as he can. There probably will come a point when he has to say, I need to move on, because I'm developing players for positions and I need to know if you're going to be one of them. It doesn't look particularly promising at this stage. You know, you're kind of getting to the stage where you keep declining, then eventually the train's going to leave the station. I'm not sure he'll rule it out entirely, but I just get the sense that certain players have made the decision, right, that's it. And Volpato, I think, is getting to the stage where he actually needs to give a pretty firm indication. Until he speaks, there are rumours, you know, even his agent speaking is not the same as him speaking. There are rumours abounding and have been for so long. Rumours about why he left the A-League, you know, so the pro camp say it's because the clubs weren't good enough for him and he had to go and challenge himself in Europe. There are others who say his attitude wasn't great in the A-League. So until the player himself actually speaks, the vacuum will be filled by rumours. But it does feel like it's getting to a point where maybe the Australian camp have got to move on.
The A-League men's competition, it's had its fair share of negative publicity around the finances off the field as well as various items. But we must celebrate the A-League men's competition because of just the contribution it's made to this squad. In particular, you know, you took Wonder Boy rehabilitated in Daniel Arzani, Paul Izzo, and Stamatolopoulos, who's had a fabulous season, and Adam Taggart, who had all sorts of injury issues, has rehabilitated himself at Perth as well. So the A-League's still performing its function in creating opportunities and talent for the national team. We must celebrate that, surely.
Absolutely. And from a football fan's point of view, the end of the A-League season was fantastic. You know, to see those crowds, to see the football that was produced, the drama, the extraordinary drama, to see the team narratives, the individual narratives. It has been very difficult as someone who's covered the A-League since the beginning. And, you know, it's no great secret. I was one of the people released by the A-League in January, but it's been really difficult to read all the headlines about financial struggle, et cetera, when I've always been so invested in it. And it's been fantastic to actually think about the football, watch the football, celebrate really humble individuals like Josh Nisbet getting a call up and seeing that sort of well-beaten pathway. I remember Mitch Duke coming through as a kid at the Mariners just as a teenager, and now we're seeing Josh Nisbet, not a teenager anymore, but we're seeing that pathway and wonderful, wonderful stuff that Mark Jackson's done there, building on the amazing work of Nick Montgomery. So yeah, there's so much to celebrate, and I'm really pleased to see a whole bunch of those faces make it into this squad.
And Tom, speaking of celebrating, as we segue from this side of the world to the other, a little celebration in your house, no doubt, at the end of the championship season, the playoff, the richest game in the world that we always hear about at the end of every season against Leeds. It was a flip of the coin. Southampton finished fourth on the ladder, but with the new or relatively new form of promotion and relegation with the playoff system, they just hit form at the right time, and Russell Martin has them up at the first time of asking. How exciting was that for you as a Saints fan? And you know, what are your expectations going into this season? That's a couple of months away.
Well, just to be clear, this is obviously a four-hour show because I don't intend to talk any less than that. I'm still on cloud nine, to be honest. Let's be honest. This is why we follow football. I've had some really shitty times, some very bad times with Southampton over the years, particularly recently. So to sit there with my son, who supports Southampton as well, poor thing, to watch that game, the only sad thing was that, you know, we were celebrating at 2:15 in the morning, knowing I had work a few hours later and couldn't really go off and have a night out in celebration, but made up for it since. It's been wonderful to see that the last few months in particular, or the last few weeks, some wobbly results notwithstanding, the way the club and the fans have united, the atmosphere they put on in the second leg of the semi-final against West Brom was, I've never seen anything like seeing the footage of the team arriving to the, you know, there's red smoke in the air, there was the chanting, the West Brom bus got held up because there were so many Southampton fans. It felt, you know, in the best possible way, it felt hostile. It felt like a proper, really raucous football environment. And they carried that on during the game, swept to victory, went to Wembley, kind of did the opposite at Wembley, neutralised Leeds, just tactically beat them and just, you know, hit them on the break. Once was all that was necessary, but defended really, really well. Leeds hit the bar once. I think Alex McCarthy made one really good save. Other than that, really repelled them well, played the game, not the occasion, and we celebrated afterwards. And next season will be tough. It's tough for every single team that goes up. We can spend a bit more money now than we've been able to over the last year because of the financial fair play stuff, but still, they're going to have to recruit really cleverly, and it's a style of football, paradoxically, which might actually be better in the Premier League. You know, the Championship is pretty rugged and pretty agricultural at times. There are teams who are, you know, some of the refereeing is baffling in the Championship. So maybe the style of play will survive better in the Premier League, but then the intensity is that much higher. So those are questions I have to be honest, I'm going to worry about a little bit down the track. Right now, I'm just going to celebrate being a Southampton fan and, funnily enough, coming fourth but getting a trophy.
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it? But insofar as the gaffer, so in a 500 game player in his own right, Norwich City legend, Scotland international, still a relatively young manager, 38 years old. We've seen a lot of managers in their 30s of recent times step up and be given opportunities. We saw what Ralf Hasenhüttl was able to do with the club for a long period, but the highs were high and the lows were low. But we go back to Mauricio Pochettino really making his name at Southampton all those years ago. What do you make of him as a manager, and can we see something of the likes of, say, a Brentford, for example, punching above their... Well, Brentford are obviously a smaller club than Southampton, but you take the point.
Yeah, I think there are interesting parallels there. Also Brighton and there, you know, those clubs that are well-run, which we, I think we are now. I think there was big question marks last year, but they got a lot of decisions right over the last 12 months, and probably the biggest was to bring in Russell Martin, who the club was so toxic when we got relegated. There were players who didn't want to be there. There were big question marks over which players were going to leave, and you know, if you have to remember, when we got relegated in 2005, we pretty much went straight down again to League One and almost went bust because things were so bad. Whereas Russell Martin has created a culture there that the players have bought into, a certain style of play. And yeah, it was up and down. And he's a young manager. His style is young. It's a sort of system that takes a long time to implement. But the cultural change at that club, led by lots of people, but led by Russell Martin in particular, is extraordinary. As I said before, to reunite the fans and the players and the staff and the whole club on that one journey was his biggest achievement. And we played some cracking football. I mean, I was in the UK over Christmas, saw them a few times, and some of the attacking play was fantastic. And just, you know, the it's mesmerizing when they get it right. So with a bit of smart recruitment, particularly a new striker we need, who knows? Like I said, I worry about that down the track. But for now, Russell Martin deserves every single plaudit that comes his way. I think it's funny that he's about the only one who's not been linked with a move elsewhere, really. But obviously, Kieran McKenna's is staying at Ipswich. But no one's talking about Russell Martin. I'm pretty happy about that. I think he can stay with us and really build something special.
Yeah, we're seeing more of that, aren't we? Managers who are declining opportunities and embedding themselves in clubs where they're happy and getting results, and where there's a culture at the top that they feel comfortable with. Mate, I'm not going to quite go for that 4 hours that you suggested, as much as we'd love to. But what I will do, I don't feel like I'm really putting you on the spot to suggest that we might get you on for a preview of the Premier League season to find out what that squad looks like a little bit closer to kick off. Can we count on you for that?
Yeah, I'll set aside August for you. Don't worry.
We'll do a four-part series, mate. Hey, Tom, look, great to hear from you. Great to hear you're doing well. You referenced, the ups and downs, obviously, of this past season, but you're back on the upswing now, mate, and loving football on both sides of the world, which is really, you know, what it's all about on our show and the passion that we all share for the great game, mate. So, Tom, thanks for coming on Box to Box again, and we'll enjoy the Socceroos, and enjoy the ride of Southampton yet to come, mate, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Anytime, boys. Always a pleasure.
Excellent. Tom Smith, he's a great man and great to chat to. Okay, stick around after the break. We're going to talk to another great man, the voice of this very program himself, Martin Tyler. We're going to find out what he thinks of Gareth Southgate's squad's chances of finally ascending to the top of the podium in the upcoming Euros in Germany. Hey, gentlemen, we are now officially in winter, in the Southern Hemisphere at least. So it's time to stock up on your Swiss vitamins, of course, at Chemist Warehouse. Now, Derek, I know you are a vitamin guy. I love the Swiss Ultivite Men's, 120 tablets for just $35.99 each. That will last you 3 months, one a day for $35.99. That's got to be a pretty good deal to keep you fit, healthy, up and about.
Sounds good, Rob. Yeah, the whole winter's worth on my calculator. I'm currently in the middle of my first present, winter present from my kids from daycare. So, I should get down there and get some.
I just thought that was your sexy husky voice there, Derek. Mm. Well, you might want to grab some of the women's multivitamins, same price, same deal, $35.99 at the same time. Now, that's better, as you already indicated, than half price. And Swiss Ultiboots Liver Detox, 120 tablets for $21.99. As you're traveling the world, you're over there in the States, but you do live a pretty clean life. You're not the kind of party animal when you're doing your business. You sort of tend to reserve some of the high life for when the tournament's on and have a couple of nights on the lash.
Yes, no, I don't go out on a lash that often because when you're doing business and currently in the world, you try and pack everything in as much as you can. So, but I need some of those vitamin tablets, I tell you. I've been giving them a bit of a bash. They keep me going.
Oh, well, we better
get the liver detox I don't necessarily need unless, late in the World Cup cycle like I was in. I'm sure you remember that famous night in Qatar when... all the people who had duty-free grog that they'd brought into Qatar illegally lobbed it on my doorstep as they were going home.
Yeah, and you tried to drink it in one night. It was very funny for those listeners. Well,
I was not by myself, by the way.
No, we know that. But yeah, look, you sort of had to be there, but it was very funny for all of us watching Edge's contributions while there was a match going on down the road and him giving a running commentary on the traffic snarl around the hotel. Anyway, moving right along. Remember, if you're on regular medication for chronic conditions like high blood pressure, cholesterol or diabetes, you can save more on your prescriptions every year at Chemist Warehouse. So get along to Chemist Warehouse and do just that. Find out more in-store at chemistwarehouse.com.au/prescriptions. Chemist Warehouse, the great savings are every single day.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse, great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices, changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. Great chatting with Tom Smithies just then. But as I flagged off the top of the show, a very special friend of Box to Box, Martin Tyler, has returned to have a chat to us about the Three Lions ahead of the Euros. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, I'm very good. It's an exciting time, really. England are playing tonight, actually, in a few hours. And I'm not sure how many clues will come from that because it's more about the absentees than the ones that are actually playing. But it's building up fever here, and you know what it's like in England when the national team goes into a tournament. There is a huge amount of desire, a huge amount of optimism, some of it often misplaced, but England have done well in tournaments recently, so there's a real feeling here that they can do something maybe even better this time.
Absolutely. We'll get to all that in a moment. But anyone listening to this show in Australia is as likely to have seen you on the Stan coverage on Sunday morning of the Champions League, which we watched. Speaking of Wembley, there is a question I want to ask you about that. But the game we saw play out, you had to feel for Borussia Dortmund. The amount of opportunities, golden, clear-cut opportunities they had to get that go-ahead goal in the first half, but just couldn't seize their chance. And every opportunity that was missed, you just had this feeling of the inevitable, didn't you? That in the second half, Real Madrid would just do what they always do, and they ended up doing it. It was a masterclass, really, in almost, you wouldn't call it quite rope-a-dope, but they got off the canvas and landed a couple of killer blows.
Yeah, I said at halftime, actually, working for Stan for the first time, I said, I don't think Dortmund can play any better than they played in the first half. I thought they were absolutely tremendous. And Real Madrid, as I say, were on the ropes, and they just about stopped themselves being knocked down and knocked out. And they got up and came out strongly in the second half, as you'd rather suspect. Said, now, there was a lot of talk at halftime that it would be 1-0 like the finals have been for many years. This time it was 2-0, but they scored through a set piece, well worked, but scored by probably the smallest man in the penalty area. And a mistake by young Ian Matson, who's on loan at Dortmund from Chelsea here, very close to where I live, actually. And, you know, when you look at it like that, you lose football matches like that. So... Mm-hmm. And you get the chances, you have to take them. And that's what separates the stardust from the dust, really, because it was there for Dortmund. They know it, but they weren't quite good enough to take advantage of it. Playing well up to the final shot, the final effort, a goal is all well and good. But if you don't score, you don't win.
No, exactly. And, you know, just watching the incredible scenes at Wembley, the travelling fans put on such an incredible display. It could have been in Madrid or Dortmund, the noise that we heard. But unfortunately, and you referenced the last Euros of England, we can't avoid the fact that Wembley dropped the ball, sadly, and I have to say again, because this did happen in the delayed 2020 Euros, where we can't say that it was all their fault under those circumstances. But a few years on, how can anyone responsible for a stadium of that stature with a game of that magnitude not have taken every single precaution to prevent any pitch invasion? And the one that occurred at the beginning of this game seemed to occur so easily and without any significant attempt immediately from the ground security to take action.
Well, I don't think there was any intelligence, because it looked like it was something that was planned, and the three or four individuals involved might have come with the same scheme, if you like, to spoil those opening minutes and scar Wembley's reputation again. As an Englishman, I was absolutely devastated by it at the time, because I know that the atmosphere, you're absolutely right, Rob, the atmosphere was fantastic. A great credit to the fans for both clubs. And by and large, the evening passed off very well. I went out to being reasonably local. I was out amongst the fans to get into my car and drive back home. And it was great interaction. And how they were just caught with their pants down, weren't they? It was we'd had all the Lenny Kravitz bits, the stuff from the covering on the pitch, which seemed to be staying there. It looks as though we were going to play on that blue sheet. And they managed to get all that done with great professionalism. And I guess they just took a breath to say, well, that was a tricky part of the evening. And then suddenly these interlopers were mucking up those first two or three minutes. I mean, there was nothing serious happened from it, but you just think of the players, what could happen. The threat to the players is terrifying, really, if people can run on and as they did confront one or two individuals. And I think one or two of the players had decided that the best way was to meet fire with fire and help the excavation exercise, and they got them off and they got them out. But it was not good, and I'm sure UEFA will have something to say about it. And it's another setback. By and large, the football in England is nothing like the hooligan years of, 30, 40 years ago now. Thank God that's the case. But, yeah, it was a blot on the school report, so to speak. And, Wembley had waited 10 years to get a Champions League final again. Strangely enough, Borussia Dortmund, 11 years, actually, since Borussia Dortmund played Bayern there in 2013. But the 2021 has resonated. Still, people still think about it here. And I know families who won't go to Wembley because they had such a horrendous experience that night. It hasn't reoccurred in any shape, in any cup finals or playoff games or the games at Wembley. But this was the big one. The world was watching, and what the world saw wasn't right.
Martin, of course, we've been discussing the games at Wembley, and some significance there was the fact one of the stars on the pitch was Jude Bellingham. If we switch our attention to England and the Euros, he, of course, won't feature in the friendlies you mentioned off the top, but he'll surely and obviously play a key role if England are to progress far in Euro 2024. My question is, how beneficial do you think it's potentially been for him, not just being at a club like Real Madrid, but being away from the spotlight in England? We've seen other players who get under the scrutiny and it doesn't always work well. Jude Bellingham has been able to progress his career away from the cameras and away from the media, and obviously is taking great strides this season with Madrid.
Yes, it was an amazing move for one so young. Of course, he got into Birmingham City's first team at a ridiculously early age. I do think you judge it probably by individual people rather than a theme. I mean, Jude Bellingham is not just an exceptional footballer, he's an exceptional young person. He's got a fantastic family support. He's got a brother who's playing in Championship football, who's having to be a little bit under Jude's shadow. But going to Dortmund was a great thing for him, I think, as a person, a young person. And the football was the kind of football that he slotted into straight away. But going to Real Madrid and turning down the overtures from top English clubs, the chance to come home. You know, people were thinking, oh, well, he won a few years in Germany, he want to come back and play in his own country. But he knew where he was going. He knew that he was capable of doing what he has done. And he is going to be absolutely crucial. I mean, his last kick at Wembley before the Champions League final was scoring a goal to give England a very late draw against Belgium in the last game they played before tonight. However big the stage is, he strides onto it, and he can do that with temperament as well as talent.
And he's going to join a squad which, you know, is arguably, you know, one of the best that England have ever assembled. You know, you think about him as the main man, but then you also think about the seasons that Phil Foden has had at Manchester City, that Bukayo Saka has had at Arsenal, and of course even Harry Kane, who hasn't won silverware, is still the golden boot in the Bundesliga. So, and there's other players I haven't even mentioned yet. Yeah, is this possibly the best squad since 1966? The best group of players that they've ever pulled together. And the age profile as well also makes it exciting, doesn't it, Martin?
Well, those of us of a certain age would tell you that the feeling in this country in 1970 was the 1970 squad was better than the 1966 squad, and they should have done better. Knocked out in the quarterfinals, having been 2-0 up against West Germany. Repeat, of course, of the final 4 years earlier. I think it's a bit top-heavy, the squad, in the sense the attacking players are really good, and obviously, as Dortmund showed, if you don't put the ball in the net, you're not going to win games and progress in the tournament. And England have got great capacity in the firepower and generally in attack creativity with all the players that you've mentioned. And the likes of Declan Rice sort of prompting it, the pass before the pass before the pass before the goal, that kind of stuff, you know. And it's at the back that the concerns are. There are injuries, Harry Maguire, Luke Shaw, who very much strong, reliable players under Gareth Southgate, for Gareth Southgate. John Stones had a terrible cup final, really, bless him. He's a very good player, but he was brought back after an absence. He'd been injured playing for England, actually. And how is he? He's having a special individual fitness program with England this week. And the left-back issue is a real problem, because Joe Gomez, who has played quite a few games this season for Liverpool at left-back, is a right-footer, and right-back or centre-back would be his preferred position. So there is a lot of concern about how it's going to be, not just laid out when the tournament starts, but what sort of rehearsal time they're going to get together with the sort of shape. Now, football's not like that. Doing weeks and weeks of training and getting your system right doesn't guarantee that when when the first whistle blows, it's all going to work. But you do like to have a, like show business, you like to have a proper rehearsal, although the old saying is, the worse the rehearsal, the better the show. But I don't think that happens in football. So that's the question. Jordan Pickford's had a really good season in goal, but he made a bad mistake in the Belgium game, led to Yuri Tielemans scoring a fine goal. And there are issues and question marks in that part of the pitch. But as you said and referred to quite correctly, the attacking side of it, that probably is the best, and maybe the best ever England have had going into a tournament, with the creativity and the talent and the way they've shown. You know, a lot of big games over the last couple of years, how good they are. Match-winning players, game changers.
Of course, Gareth's got an engorged squad, this team, and he'll have to shed seven of his players. That will be one of the narratives, I'm sure, as we look for meaning and some narrative out of these friendlies coming up. Is there anyone that you think is seemingly peripheral but could be just a good performance away from breaking in, and potentially thinking about some of these injuries too? If Luke Shaw doesn't make it, if Harry Maguire doesn't make it, are there people that potentially are being looked at as making up the numbers but could find themselves in the squad and possibly even in the starting 11?
Well, players like Ezri Konsa, Lewis Dunk is a very good Premier League player, and a club that have depended, Brighton and Hove Albion have depended a lot on him, but he had a pretty harrowing time in the internationals in March. So, yes, there'll be chances for that. There's sort of players that probably find it harder, the backup forwards and the backup midfield players. Adam Wharton at Crystal Palace has only played in the Premier League from mid-January, from Blackburn Rovers. He's a real talent. And he's the player who could maybe cover for Declan Rice, you know. And so there are those who look as though they're on the outside. Eberechi Eze, who was from Palace as well, who probably is one that might just find there are too many good players ahead of him, or better players. He's a very good player. But again, it's an embarrassment of riches in some areas. And we're I think, in the pauper zone, the crucial area at the back, because you've got to start by trying to keep clean sheets. And Gareth Southgate, of course, a former centre-half, England centre-half himself, is probably the one criticism that he gets, is that he is too defensive and not quite ready to just let the hand break off and let these talented guys go. And so we might win, 5-3 or something like that. Defenders always want to win 1-0 or 2-0. They want clean sheets. So I think keeping a clean sheet will be difficult. But England are very good, and they're rightly amongst the favourites. But it's a tournament. For years, it was all disappointment. Then the semi-final of the World Cup and the semi-final of the inaugural Nations League as well, which was a pretty good achievement as well. And then the Euros that ended on the penalty shootout. And, of course, Harry Kane's penalty miss in the quarterfinals against France in Qatar. So the form guide is good, and a lot of these players have been part of that. And the extra ones, I know Bellingham played very well in Qatar, and he really was a boy then. So yeah, I think they're not just good players; they're responsible players, and they are a very, very together squad. I think that's the thing that is really impressive. There are no factions, which there have been in the past, and those who were part of those factions readily admit it now. There were club rivalries within an England setup. That's not the case now. Gareth Southgate's got rid of all that, and I do think they'll be ready to go. The question will be who actually is ready to go on an individual basis, because England need one or two of those defenders who are on the treatment table as we speak, probably, to have a good 10 days or so and be worth putting into the squad, even if they don't play, maybe even in the group games.
Yeah, we saw Ben Stokes at England training camp this week, and it is something that they tend to do. They like to do. They bring in people from other sports to provide a different perspective. And, of course, you mentioned there about the togetherness of the England, the current men's football team. That'll be something I'm sure Ben Stokes will have seen and thinks a good thing, because that's exactly what he's done with the England cricket team, is to build a team that's all pointed in the same direction. One thing that he may pass on, though, is the fear factor, or playing without fear. Certainly what he's managed to do with England cricket. I wonder whether, you know, Gareth Southgate thought, you know, that maybe is the missing piece. He's got the squad, but actually you mentioned all of those near misses and penalties and all the rest of it. Maybe that's the bit that, time and time again, looking at it historically for England and even predating Gareth Southgate, that when the big moments have come along, ever since 1966, England really haven't lived in those moments. So I wonder if that was a coincidence, Martin, to see Ben Stokes there.
Well, Ben Stokes does play without fear, as a person and as a captain. They don't always win. And that's something that does get dissected here, you know. I mean, the last World Cup they were involved in was a complete mess. And that is something why don't you play sensibly sometimes, you know? Why do you have to be so cavalier? So I don't know quite how that conversation would go with Gareth. I think Gareth would take the side of playing in a more conventional way in cricket, which he loves his cricket, by the way. So I'm not surprised that he's invited Ben in, who's a very positive person. And yeah, I think you can learn from other sports. I think that's certainly the case in Australia, where the interaction is, I think at professional level, it's very good. I'm not so sure that I think the pecking order in sports still seems to be the same as it was when I came to Australia in the 1980s, but I know at the top of I saw Darren Burgess, who's coaching in the Aussie Rules, who was over here for last week. He's worked in the Premier League with Liverpool and Arsenal, and is now back giving his skills on performance analysis with, he'll probably tell me which Aussie Rules team it is, but, you know, his interaction, he came back to talk to a group of football analysts and talking about actually how many games you should play, and that's a factor going into this tournament, you know, the general level of fatigue. I worked with Gary Neville for many years, and he told me one thing which I thought was, I would be like this myself as a commentator, or even if I was involved in a different capacity, is that you'd rather go straight from the Premier League season into the tournament than have this sort of phony wartime where you get a bit of holiday, you don't quite know what your fitness levels are. You know, at the end of a Premier League season, unless you're injured, you're in good shape to go and play again. We're waiting. It seems quite a long time since I was at the Jurgen Klopp farewell, you know, that was the last Premier League weekend. And it seems quite a long time before a ball will be kicked in the Euros. So that's also a factor too. We have to wait for the Champions League final. Bellingham, as you say, won't be with England. Toni Kroos won't be with Germany, where he's going to have a last hurrah. Host nations don't do very well in these tournaments, by the way. England came as close in recent times to holding the trophy on home soil. So I looking around the others, I think this is really, put your hand up if you're fit to play on June the 12th or 13th when everyone is ready to go on the starting blocks, because there's been so much demand on the top players, and that is an issue in the game at the moment. But I'm sure the examiner, Germany will host it brilliantly. They hosted the World Cup in 2006. Fantastic. It was an absolute joy to be there. So everything will be in place, and bring it on.
Well, those three group games England will face in Germany will be Serbia, Denmark, familiar foe for England in recent tournaments, and Slovenia, who are probably, there's no such thing as an unknown quantity in football these days, but probably not someone that England are overly familiar with. You know, England under Gareth now do these quite routinely. Barton, you'll remember when England have failed to get out of groups at World Cups and Euros quite spectacularly. One thing they are good at is getting out of these groups now. Do you foresee any danger here? Or is there a banana skin waiting for them?
You never know. I mean, the playing against England for all those countries will be a special thing for the players involved, and they know they'll be in the spotlight. And for some, it'll be an opportunity to maybe end up playing in the Premier League if they do well in a game against England, with the whole country watching, and more importantly, all the scouts for Premier League teams. So, yeah, it is a cliche that there are no easy games. I think the problem we're having with the calendar is the tournaments are being expanding all the time. So it's almost impossible not to qualify. I mean, when you were saying, Derek, about England's past record, I've been covering European Championships where England weren't there, you know, with pretty good teams in 84. And Denmark, actually, were responsible for England not going in 84. And there have been issues in the past about even getting across the line into the tournament. Now you've virtually got a free pass into it, and then it's up to you to make the most of it. I hope one thing about tournaments is two or three people will stand out at the end. Enzo Fernandez, who hasn't done particularly well for Chelsea, got a massive move into the Premier League within weeks of that World Cup finishing, and he'd only played in Europe for Benfica for 6 months before then. So that, I think that's a fascinating side issue. Who are going to be the heroes? You know, we've outlined a few potential England ones, and you know, Kylian Mbappe is just, I believe, probably signing at Real Madrid at the moment we're speaking. You know, he's still regarded, although you know, he faltered a little bit. Although they were very unlucky, PSG, to go out to Dortmund. They hit the, I mentioned it a couple of times on Sunday morning your time with the stand coverage, that they hit the woodwork six times in two legs, and it's a bit careless to do that. But that's how close they were to knocking Dortmund out, and Mbappe playing in the Champions League final. Mm. So they'll have any team with Mbappe in it will have a chance. And I just think it's almost like going back to school. We know the abilities of the players, but this is another test in a country in a tournament situation, where you're away. You know, some players react well to being in these camps. Other players get very homesick if you're not playing. It's all sorts of personal. They are people. I think that's the joy of why we do all this, you know, that we're dealing with people. The backstories are really, really interesting. And some of them will come home with winners' medals. And whichever home that is, I hope they've deserved it. And of course, as an Englishman, I hope that it's of a cliche, isn't it, bringing it back home. And I'm not sure we're really allowed to say that football's coming home, but that's what will be said if England do hold up the trophy in 5 weeks' time.
Yes, and I was watching the highlights of that last Euro final where a few of the Italian players immediately after the full-time whistle was blown, made a beeline to the camera and added an R in front of the H in so far as the destination of that trophy. It's fun. We love all the banter and playfulness around that song and all the rest of it. But, yeah, I guess there's one Ben, it's not Stokes, that might solve some of those defensive problems in the English side. But he'll be watching it on the sidelines just like the rest of us, Ben White, until that standoff eventually ends. But that's a whole nother discussion to have, and we might have it with you on another day, Martin, as we say farewell to you, my friend. Enjoy the Euros. Thanks again for your time, as always, and hopefully maybe we might even be talking to you if England can finally lift that trophy again for the first time in nearly 60 years.
Yeah, it's going to happen one day. I think they've got a great chance, and they know that. But so do all their rivals, and they'll be raising their game in those matches that England are playing. And I wouldn't read too much into what happens in these two friendlies. either way, if it goes well. I mean, it's Iceland's the other game, which will be played at Wembley later in the week. So it's the phony war, as I say. It's what happens when they're in the tunnel. I love that, you know, as a commentator, when they hand over to you and the players are standing in the tunnel and you can see the look in their eyes. You can see those are right up for it, whose natural confidence is going to get them through the first few minutes of it because they believe they should be there. There are those who are nervous and maybe a little bit apprehensive until they get their game going. It's a real eye-opener, actually. And it can tell you a lot. Of course, I grew up with all the commentating here, over here with the Roy Keanes and Patrick Vieiras, and Gary Neville's not looking at each other, and Gary Neville not even looking at his brother who was captaining the opposing team, that kind of stuff. So, as I say, bring it on. Listen, it's the world game. It's a wonderful game. We're talking about it because whichever hemisphere we're in, we feel the same about it. And that's why it's great to talk to you guys, because I know you care about it just as much as I do.
Yeah, exactly, Martin. And as you know, there are games we'll get up at 2 a.m. On this side of the world just to watch and get involved in it because, you're very right. It's as much a passion here, as you know, as it is anywhere else in the world. Martin, we better say farewell, mate. All the best. Stay well. And you're looking fantastic. And in this Indian summer of your commentary career, mate, go on for many years to come, mate.
Yeah, I'm still a gun for hire, so if anybody needs me, you can tell them where to find me.
Good on you. They're great.
Cheers, Martin. Guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Thanks. Tyler. What a privilege it is to speak to him. When we started this show nearly 10 years ago, there was only one voice that we wanted to wrap around the sounds of our program, and that was Martin's. It's been ever thus. Okay, stick around. World Cup Corner next on Box to Box.
Willa, willa, willa. Everybody's going to buy Hoyt's Spices. Everyone's going to save a dollar or two. Everybody's going to buy Hoyt's Spices, yeah.
Do I ever talk about flavor-packed meals on this show, Edge?
Oh, you do. You do. I had a flavor-packed meal in Los Angeles at Grand Central Market today. And I'm sure these Mexicans who gave me that made the tacos had a bit of Hoyt's behind the cupboard.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you can't make a taco without the classic chili powder and a whole range of other different flavors when you're making your tacos. I love tacos. Very popular in my house. You need to look no further, as we know, for amazing herbs and spices to change the mood of your food with our friends at Hoyt's. And the flavors of your next meal, they're just going to explode in your mouth. Now, I remember talking about this a little while ago. I had some leftover pork in the fridge, some pork chops off the bone. Just fantastic. And you know what I did with them?
You ground it up?
Well, the spices I did, I know Derek would have liked this, a little white sugar and brown sugar, but then salt, pepper, garlic, chili powder, paprika, smoked paprika, oregano, ground mustard and cayenne. It was the best. Rub on that pork, a little olive oil, I barbecued them, a squeeze of lemon juice, and they were delicious. Derek, would you like that little combo?
My mouth is watering, Rob.
And remember to refill any of your empty spice jars with Hoyt's value packs. You'll be happy with Hoyt's at Coles, Woolworths and all good independent supermarkets.
Fill those empties
with Hoyt's spices, yeah.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's herbs and spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. And if you're wondering when you're listening, whether it's just a little bit surreal and a bit fanboyish to be chatting to a guy like Martin Tyler, well, let me assure you it is. I know personally for someone like me who I don't know, partly fell in love with football over so many years because I heard his voice and I was always just a little bit happier when I was hearing him commentating on the Socceroos matches in World Cups to provide that soundtrack. So, Martin, just so generous with his time to come on and have a yarn to us about football. He's a passionate football man and one of the great people out there talking about the game. Now, we've got a couple of topics we want to range over in World Cup Corner. We sort of feel like we've already almost covered the World Cup. But Edge, as you are wont to do from time to time, you do like to do a little bit of a deep dive into the finances of football. So give us the 101 executive summary of Australian football finances as they stand right now.
Well, Football Australia had its annual general meeting last week, and I was really interested to see how they were financially performing, especially after the Socceroos round of 16 effort at the World Cup. So their revenue, Rob, 70. I'm going to do it in US dollars because it's the currency of football. $74 million was Football Australia's revenue for the reporting period. That's an increase of 48% on the year-on-year increase. Interestingly enough, though, in that broadcast was actually 26% down. So the broadcast was revenue was reported at $7.5 million. However, what was up was sponsorship, 47%, US $13 million. That is pretty interesting, and that includes obviously the deal that the Socceroos did with Subway, which is reportedly $8 million, and also the prize money from the round of 16 result. The Socceroos earned $12.7 million. Don't forget they, through their collective bargaining, split that with the Federation 50-50. So the players get half of that as a direct bonus. And interestingly enough, Rob, merchandise in the reporting period 2 years ago was $725,000. And it is, in the reporting period, grew to $2.1 million. But James Johnson has let a little secret out that in the first quarter of the next reporting period, they've already beaten last year's results. So that would be the impact of the Women's World Cup. And that, so the first quarter of this reporting period, they've done more than $2.1 million in merchandise sales, which was the amount for the whole period last time. And he let everybody know that of all of the shirts that are being sold, for every three of them, two of them are a Matilda shirt. So the Matilda's doing very, very well off the back of that. And those numbers don't include the bonus sort of financials from the FIFA World Cup in Australia, New Zealand. And the Matildas, for their fourth place finish at the World Cup, Australia, New Zealand 2023, they earned $6.3 million in prize money. And all of the talk, Rob, all the talk, I know you're going to talk about it later in Stoppage Time of the Week, is just what a bounty is coming for Football Australia with the television rights, Derek. The Matildas, they're expecting it to more than double and the off the back of the Matildas and the popularity and the viewing audience. That's extremely good news. And the girls getting their job done for Football Australia's revenue, Rob.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's quite incredible. And as people who occupy that commercial space in the media and in sport, as we all do in this world, when sponsors are knocking on your door to pay top dollar for to just to be associated, that means that you're probably knocking some money back through competitors who want to be involved in these competitive bidding processes for different categories. So yeah, it's a great luxury, and it's one that we should never underestimate in this golden period of football in this country. So so that is fantastic news. All right, now Derek, when you sent this article on our WhatsApp group, I did a double take when I looked at the content to just confirm that it was legit, but it is. Just talk us through it for those who've missed this German football survey.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah, and just as a caveat, I'm kind of reacting to it in the moment too, so I'll do my best to get through it and make it make sense as much as I can. But it's the story that the public broadcaster in Germany, who are the ARD, so the equivalent of the ABC or the BBC, ran a poll that was in connection to a documentary that they're releasing soon. And it is a documentary about unity, justice and diversity. So it's not a racist documentary, it's just a documentary talking potentially about racist and racism. This survey asked respondents whether they thought the German national football team should be whiter or have more white players. And 21% of the respondents, and there were over 1,000 of them randomly selected for this survey, over 21%.
Are you serious?
Agreed with this proposition. Yes, Edge, is on the BBC website, it's on The Guardian's website, so I've not that I've fallen into like a parallel universe with the rest of you.
That is outrageous.
So, and yeah, obviously Julian Nagelsmann, Joshua Kimmich and others have come out and obviously condemned the survey. I don't know whether they're condemning the results of the survey or the fact that the survey took place and this question was asked, probably a little from column A and a little from column B. Obviously, the outcome of the survey, whatever happens, is diabolical. And, you know, Germany has at times, I mean, like every country has its problems in this area. You know, the German World Cup win was of always triumphed as a bit like France's in 1998 and the subsequent success of a justification, you know, like I suppose a symbolism of the modern countries that they'd become enriched through immigration. But yeah, look, here, 21% saying that that Germany should have a wider team. And this comes off the back of the furore a few weeks ago where there was a surge in German football fans ordering the number 44 shirts for this tournament because the slightly retro cool numbers on the back looked 44 looked exactly like the SS insignia from the 1930s and 1940s, and they had to ban people from ordering the number 44 shirts on the Adidas website. So yeah, look, trouble, you know, Germany's just about to host a major tournament. I'm sure it will be a fabulous tournament, and I'm sure that everyone involved in the squad will be supporting everyone that's involved, all the players of mixed heritage, dual heritage, etc., in that team, and get behind the boys. But yeah, it's just a shocking result, but also just how this was allowed to happen and how it got out. Who knows, Rob?
Yeah, no, exactly, and it's, you don't have to think too far back to remember, you know, some of the reactions that Mesut Ozil suffered during his time. So, you know,
just when you think you've seen it all, Rob.
Oh, it's just bizarre the fact that that this one got through the bureaucratic red tape to land in a serious discussion. It's sort of sad, really. But anyway, it did. We're talking about it now. Hopefully, it will get kicked into the dustbin of history and stay there and not reemerge. All right. Well, look, let's wrap it up there, gentlemen. We've got stoppage time to come later in the week. Edge, you're heading off to Disneyland when you wake up in the morning, mate. Universal Studios, Venice Beach to pump some iron.
I'm not doing any of that. I've got back-to-back meetings the whole day. I did, you know, have a very, very big steak, though, last night, Rob.
They only do big steaks.
Can I just give myself a pat on the back? It is only approaching 3 a.m. in the morning.
I know. He's done brilliantly well. He had a nana nap this afternoon to make sure he could stay up for us, and he's looking absolutely bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Well done, Michael. Thank you, mate, the inveterate traveller that you are. Derek, thank you, mate.
Thanks, gents. See you next time.
And to Adam Maloney, who is back after a wonderful holiday with his beautiful family and pressing the buttons, stitching this together, making sure all those little seamless edits that you don't hear. And to you, thank you for listening to us again. If you have a moment, please review us wherever you listen to your favourite shows. It is just so easy. Just scroll down, see 5 stars, hit 5 stars. That's a review. You don't even have to write anything if you don't
want
to.
Just give it a little tickle, Rob, the
That's
five
it.
Stars.
That's it. Just hit tap. That's all you do. It's as easy as hitting play. Make sure you subscribe to Box to Box. We ask you every week, so please do it. We're talking to you if you think we're talking to you. Yes, it's you who is listening right now to Box to Box. Stoppage time and offside. Tweet us at Box to Box NTS if you'd like to give us some feedback and follow us on X. Like us on Facebook and join us throughout the week as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the world game.